All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Business Blast podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Wagner. As always, today's sponsor is Authors Unite. And if you want to become a successful author, Authors Unite is the place to go. So head on over to authorsunite.com to check out a free case study that'll teach you how to do exactly that. And now let's jump into the episode. All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Business Blast podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Wagner. Today, I have Corey Blake with us. He's the founder of RTC, the publisher of Conscious Capitalism Press, a TEDx speaker and storyteller and an artist. So welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Tyler. I appreciate you having me.
Of course. Grateful to have you here. So the first one, we'd like to get to know you, is what is the best story from your life that has an underlying valuable message?
Well, for this one, I'm going to share with you a 16-year-old version of myself that worked at a fast food restaurant that most of us have all been to. I was a drive-through operator, right, which meant that I did the cash register, the drive-through lane. And nearly every shift that I worked for a period of a couple of years, I stole from that company. There was a margin of error that we were allowed on those terminals of about 2%. And actually, it wasn't about 2%. It was exactly 2%. and I was a pretty smart kid, which meant that I could listen to someone, you know, change their mind four or five times before I touched the terminal. And that meant that I didn't make mistakes. So I had this 2% margin of error that I could fuck around with, and I did. $1,000 lunch rush, you know, 2%, do the math, $20 in my pocket. And this was back in a day when minimum wage was $5 an hour. So on a 8-hour shift, I just increased my pay by 50% tax-free.
Yeah.
So, right. So back then, I didn't feel too bad about what I was doing. I certainly justified it. As I started sharing this story occasionally with folks as I got older, I mentioned that I felt badly about what I had done. And then I came to this point where I realized actually that was a lie. I don't feel bad about what I did. What I feel is rather clever, right? Because this major corporation invested a lot of money in that system and I beat it. So the value of me opening with that story is actually that I'm allowing the audience, right, to judge me if they choose. And I'm not trying to control their perception necessarily, like I might do if I was broadcasting a story that reflects how awesome I am. So we're kind of starting from that place of vulnerability, which ultimately is really the basis of most of the work I do in the world.
Nice, dude. That is, I've done almost 1,300 interviews, dude. It's never started out like this.
Here we go, man.
Welcome to the show. Put on your seatbelt and let's go, dude. This is going to be awesome. Okay, so the next one I got for you is what is the most valuable piece of information we should know that's within your expertise or industry?
So my expertise is storytelling, and what I've discovered through my work, because I work with businesses, a place I never thought I would end up. I started as an actor, so I kind of wandered into working with businesses tangentially. But what I've discovered over the past decade and a half that I've been doing the work that I've been doing is that diagnostically, so much that goes on within an organization, I'm tempted to say everything, all of the challenges that we face at a diagnostic level can be solved through storytelling. I find that that any challenges that people are facing, right, businesses are populated by people, human beings. And as human beings, there are stories that drive our behavior, understandings that we have of the world, beliefs that we hold. And that narrative is so powerful that it drives the way that we behave, which generates our results within an organization. Organizationally, in groups, whether it's teams or you know, entire companies, there are stories that power the way that we are together. And so what we do as an organization, I mean, it kind of parlays into that, is that we go in and help to uncover what are the stories that are driving certain behaviors and determine if in fact they are authentic and true, or if they are simply versions of stories, right, that are generating crappy behavior. Like you know, engagement with your people, right? Very oftentimes that results from people who have a sense of their own purpose and a sense of the company's purpose, but no ability to tie the two together, right? And that's an absence, like there's a gap in that story. If we can fill in that story, we can oftentimes dramatically change their relationship to the company, and they perform entirely differently, and then they generate entirely different results. So we play around with story at the diagnostic level and find that it can solve most of the stuff that we tend to try to solve more cosmetically.
Mm-hmm. And then what's your best piece of overall business advice? So not necessarily industry specific.
So I'm a huge fan in my life. I'm a fan of writing big checks for my own development. So the first time that I did it was probably close to a decade ago. I went to an event called In the Dreaming Room with a guy named Michael Gerber, who wrote The E-Myth. A lot of us business folks know Michael Gerber. And back then that was a $3,000 price tag. And that was, you know, my business was relatively new, and that was a completely unreasonable expense. And yet I felt like I needed to challenge myself and do something different. And that time with Michael was really pivotal. He put me on the hot seat. He challenged me in ways that the world typically didn't challenge me. And I got pretty addicted to that stuff. So nowadays, you know, we do that kind of stuff constantly at a much, you know, higher price tag. I work with the Stegan Leadership Academy, and you know, that's usually 25K a year for myself. And sometimes we send other people through there. We're doing EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, right now. And I think that's about 30 grand this year. We do Gestalt work. We've dropped a lot on that, but it's also, we actually have culture and this kind of personal development work as a line item on our P&L, because investing in it, we find, increases our capacity dramatically, increases our value dramatically. So I'm a huge fan of encouraging folks to write big checks so that in ways that they will be guaranteed to grow exponentially.
Yeah, I mean, I really like what Cardone says. I'm sure you're familiar with Grant Cardone, I would think. What he says, he's like people, when you pay attention. So I think like it's, you know, and it's not to say that like these things are not worth the price tag. Like they all, well, I mean, some are not, let's say, but let's say it's worth the price tag. But also the fact that you are putting your money down, it literally does. It makes you pay attention a lot more, rather. And this is like obvious stuff. Like if you sign up for a free program, like how many free challenges, you know, there's all these challenges out now and all that stuff, nothing wrong with them. But when it's free, there's nothing really like holding you to it. So the drop-off rate's really high. But if you put 30 grand into something, you're probably going to show up. You know what I mean? Like you're probably going to do something about that.
Absolutely. I'm not somebody who can go to the gym by himself and really enjoy working out. But if I'm hired a trainer, then I'm accountable. All I got to do is show up, and I'll be a good little actor while my trainer plays director and kicks my ass and tells me what to do. And I get a lot of value from it. So I have to like program my life in that way, where as long as I show up in certain areas, I'm guaranteed to grow.
Yeah. So if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Really been sitting on this one. Because I'm not a person, I love my life today, and therefore I want to be really careful with trying to, you know, redirect anything if I had the ability to go back and change anything. I'm not someone, like, I don't regret, because I like where I am. And yet there's this piece that came to me around, I'm a polarizing personality. Like I tend to push limits and that makes some people, that lights up some people, and it makes other people really uncomfortable. And so I think I would go back and just be blunt with myself and say that you're going to polarize the world and the people that you come into contact with. And that's going to strongly attract some people to you, and it's going to repel others. And I'd like to encourage myself, because it's taken me years to be able to do this, and I'm still, you know, learning how to do it, but encourage that younger person to love the people who I push away as much as the people that I draw to me. It's very easy for me to objectify those that I push away and label them as not my people, or even judge them. And I don't find that is healthy for my spirit. So encouraging myself to learn how to do that at a younger age, love them all.
And then, so now we'll go down a little bit down a different path. In your opinion, what is the key to happiness?
So I'm a believer that that at a very young age, we all develop these superpowers that arise from pain that occurs at a deep level in our lives, like chisel fracturing of our soul when we're young. We all have certain pain, right? And then we have to figure out how to survive through that pain. And that survival mechanism becomes something that feels good, something that feels safe. And so we experiment with that a lot, and it becomes our gift, and it eventually becomes this superpower that we can use in life. And at the same time, every superpower has a shadow to it. For example, in my own world, I was raised by a Jewish mom, and she poured all of her light into me for the first 5 years of my life. And then at my fifth year, thinking that I was special and the world revolved only around me, my mom was struck with really severe depression and what we would now call bipolar disorder, and her light went out for a year. So at the end of that year period of time, she found the right mixture of medication, and her light came back on, bright as ever, right? So the rest of my childhood, she goes back to pouring all that light into me. But over the course of that single year, when her light was out, had been the person who was the safest person in my life, and she became the most dangerous, the most volatile, someone who could, you know, go into a rage at the drop of a pin. And so I had to learn how to read the energy of a room. I had to learn how to recognize just through sounds across the house, right, what mood she was in, to determine if I was safe or if I needed to take action. And if I needed to take action, I was going to become a good little performer, because the performer made mom happy, right? So it became a superpower of mine to recognize what is special in other people. It's something that I reflected back to my mom, and it made her feel good. And it was something that she certainly infused into me. The danger of my superpower, the shadow side to my superpower, is that if I'm not careful, sometimes I can use it when I want something. I can use it to manipulate people. I can use it to be more controlling. And so for me, the key to happiness has centered around coming to terms with and getting to intimately know and love that shadow side of my superpower, because it's not with bad intention that sometimes I yield it in ways that create damage, right? But the more that I am aware of it, and the more that I am choiceful, the less I feel that I'm carrying a secret, the less kind of personal ugliness that I feel in the world, the lighter I feel and the more whole I feel as a human being. And that has led to a great amount of joy in my life.
Mm. Dude, amazing answer. Thank you for that. That was good.
Thank you.
Next one is, what is the best book that you've read, and what was the number one thing you learned from that?
So the best book I've ever read, it's very personal to me. I don't know how other people will relate to it, but it's a book called Mila 18, M-I-L-A and the number 18. It's written by a gentleman named Leon Uris. He's a Jewish author. And that's the story of Polish Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto and how they survived during Nazi Germany. That book is historical fiction, which I didn't know at the time even what historical fiction was, but it was part of a history course I was taking in college. And it was so beautifully told that what it did for me at a personal level was it provided a narrative to how I understood myself, because these people were so passionate and felt such an urgent sense of responsibility because the circumstances were as heightened as they were. They all felt this tremendous responsibility that they carried to ensure that what they were doing with their lives and their time was meaningful to the point of saving others' lives. And I have always, obviously, you know, you heard a little bit of my background and my mother infusing me with this idea that I was special. I've always felt this sense of responsibility that a lot of people sacrificed before me, and that I had a responsibility to be in service to them and what they've been through and what they gave up in order for me to have this beautiful life that I get to lead. So the lesson around for me was around more of who I am and more grounding and understanding a bit more of where I come from. Really pivotal for me as a storyteller, but also me as a Jewish man who needed grounding and understanding why I feel the sense of responsibility and the level of passion and fire that I feel.
Mm. And then what is your favorite quote and why?
Love this quote. This is a quote that I paraphrased from a guy named Harold Klurman. Harold Klurman founded the Group Theater in the 1930s, which eventually became Broadway as we know it, and then became Hollywood. And Harold Klurman's quote is that the truth is like castor oil. It's bitter and it's hard to swallow. People don't want it. And so we open their mouths with entertainment and then we pour it in. Mm. I love that quote so much. It has defined a great portion of my life. I was an actor in LA for almost a decade. I acted a lot in commercials. I was a funny guy in commercials, and I did some television and I did some film work. But ultimately, like, really where I made my living and essentially where my talent was utilized was encouraging, you know, kids to drink Mountain Dew and eat cheeseburgers. And so there came a point where I realized that my talent helps open people up, right? It makes people feel good, even if it's a Mountain Dew commercial that's a takeoff on Bohemian Rhapsody, right? It's fun to watch. It makes you feel good. And then there's this sense of responsibility of, okay, well, when I've opened somebody up, what am I doing with that? And for a long time, I poured Mountain Dew down their throats, right? So the second half of my life, once I left acting and started working in different ways in storytelling, started working with businesses, was all around that sense of responsibility of, okay, if we're going to use art to open up people, we have to take tremendous care with what we do next.
Absolutely, man. Dude, thanks for being so open and sharing everything with us.
Sure. Pleasure.
The last one I got for you, where can our listeners best find and connect with you online?
Well, our website is roundtablecompanies.com. It's companies with an IES. And for folks who are particularly interested in kind of finding their own superpower, I have an offer that's under roundtablecompanies.com/purpose that helps them bypass their intellectual approach to how they might answer that question and kind of unearth something without realizing that they're doing it. It's a 30-minute guided meditation and exercise. I'd love for people to try it out if they're curious to find that for themselves. I'm on Twitter under Corey Blake 9000, and folks can find me on LinkedIn under Corey Michael Blake.
Perfect, man. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Tyler. This was a blast. I appreciate it.